Illinois may be doing something right in managing its deer population for chronic wasting disease. If you haven't heard much about this disease that strikes deer, elk, and moose, there may be one sign of the state's success in controlling its spread. Like mad cow disease, chronic wasting disease is spread by a protein, not a bacteria or virus. It's always fatal, and though it hasn't spread to livestock or humans, authorities still want to protect wild animal populations. I'm Jim Meadows. Today on Focus, we'll talk with two researchers on the University of Illinois campus about chronic wasting disease and why it's important to keep it from spreading. Our program continues after the news. Welcome to Focus. I'm Jim Meadows. Chronic wasting disease is scary, even if it's only found in deer, elk, and moose. The disease is the result of a protein, not a bacteria or a virus, and in recent years it's been found in deer and other animals in 22 states and two Canadian provinces. It was first found in Illinois 11 years ago, and since then, the Department of Natural Resources, that's the Illinois Department of Natural Resources, has been culling selected deer populations as a way to control the disease. Has the culling worked? Well, our guests on Focus today conducted a long-term study to see if it did, and the results are promising. We're talking to them today about their study's findings. Nora Mateus is a wildlife veterinary epidemiologist at the Illinois Natural History Survey on the University of Illinois Urbana campus. And Jan Nowakowski is an animal sciences professor in the Department of Animal Sciences, also at the university, and they worked together on this study. Have you had experience with animals that could suffer from chronic wasting disease? Are you a hunter who has had to deal with additional rules and regulations due to chronic wasting disease in deer? We'd like to hear what your experiences are. Give us a call at 1-800-222-9455. That's toll-free, 1-800-222-WYLL. And you can email us at will-talk@illinois.edu. And, well, for starters, let's define what is chronic wasting disease. What animals does it strike? Well, let's first of all, how do you describe a disease of this nature?
Yes. Hello, Jim. Actually, first of all, it's a pleasure to be here. In terms of the disease, this is a disease that is transmitted by a prion protein. It is an infectious protein, very different from a bacteria and a virus in the sense that a bacteria and a virus can easily induce an immune response, and that immune response is something that allows us to use some diagnostic tools. For prion diseases, because we don't have the opportunity of seeing an immune response, we do have some challenges associated with diagnostic tests, for example.
And that sounds something a little frightening, at least coming from the outside on this. It is not spread by anything alive, therefore there's nothing to kill. Although I guess if you could get rid of the bad protein, that would be a solution?
Yes, Jim, that's exactly correct. Proteins, normally when you eat food, you eat proteins and you digest those and to amino acids and use them to build new proteins in your body. Prion proteins are very resistant to digestion, either by you or by bacteria, when they're spread out to the environment. So this particular class of protein is very persistent. Think of it like your fingernails or hair in the drain. Nothing really much dissolves those. It takes fairly strong chemicals or takes fairly strong conditions. And in fact, that's the same situation with prion proteins. It takes strong chemicals to destroy those proteins if they're infectious, and it takes a long time for them to go away when they're in the environment.
And how do these proteins harm the deer?
So the protein is a protein that normally performs a biological function and causes no disease and no damage to the animal. It's actually a normal protein. Occasionally, for reasons that we don't understand, the protein folds into a different shape And this shape then is very hard to remove biologically or to break down. So it's not easily digested or turned over in the body. The protein accumulates and simply by virtue of accumulating causes damage to the cells. Since this is a protein that's present in the nervous system, it causes damage to nervous tissue and causes the symptoms we see. Over time, it continues to build up, causes more damage, causes more symptoms.
And how does it build up? Is it replicated when cells divide, for instance?
It is. So your cells are always synthesizing protein, some proteins faster than others, and prion proteins are just like that. Because it normally serves a normal function, it's being made all the time. When we have these abnormally folded prions present, they actually cause other prions to change shape, and so we're continually making normal ones that then change shape into this damage-causing structure.
Now, there are other diseases which are caused by prions, I understand, in other animals, including a couple of the diseases found in humans.
That's correct. So the one that's most in the news, of course, is mad cow disease. And we've known for several decades now about mad cow disease, which is a prion protein in cattle. And for a period of time, we didn't understand how this was spread, and the Europeans were feeding back meat and bone meal. We actually had a relatively large number of animals infected in Europe, and we've managed to control that over the past decade. The number of cases is now very small, simply by preventing breaking that cycle of giving the infectious protein back to the animals.
Okay, and the diseases that do exist in humans, there's a human version of mad cow disease, I understand?
There is a version, there's a human version of mad cow disease. It's called the variant Creutzfeldt-Jakob disease. And this human version of mad cow disease is basically acquired from the consumption of infected mad cow meat. So consuming cattle infected with mad cow disease.
Okay. And I was a little confused there. Is that the only disease, prion disease, that affects humans? This human variant of mad cow, or is there another one?
It's probably the only disease that we can consider that has been transmitted actually from animals, mm-hmm. a prion protein disease that has been transmitted from animals to humans. But there are other prion protein diseases in humans, such as Kuru, for example, is a historical Kuru, K-U-R-U.
K-U-R-U.
Yeah. So this is a historical disease that has affected humans, and it has been associated with the consumption of brain tissues from family members in New Guinea.
Okay. Not something that's done every day around here.
Hopefully not.
Okay. A question, and this is something that was emailed over to us by Michael, of course, concerning chronic wasting disease. Can it be transferred to humans, especially since many people hunt deer and eat the venison?
Well, so a couple things. First of all, there's no evidence that, in fact, chronic wasting disease can be transmitted to humans. By the same time, we want to be careful because this disease has no treatment, so we don't want to be the first one to find out that it can be transmitted. Now, it's also important to recognize that very few deer have chronic wasting disease, partly because in the state of Illinois, we've managed to control it effectively.
That's in Illinois. How do things look in other states and provinces?
So other states have used various and sundry control strategies. And certainly if you look in the scientific literature, there's a good reason for choosing different methods for control. Other states have tried to use increased hunting, widespread sharpshooting, or in fact, some cases, some states simply don't control at all. They simply offer testing of all the venison that's shot or by hunters, and the thought is, okay, we'll simply not consume the animals that are infected, and it's cheaper and easier just to test.
And going back a little bit to the risk of transmission of this disease from deer to humans, I think that at this point, we're still very young, sort of, in the knowledge of chronic wasting disease. And because of the stage we are in terms of our understanding of the potential risks or not of transmissions to humans, we still recommend that people, for example, do not consume deer that is infected with chronic wasting disease. There is a few guidelines that you can also find in the CDC. Things like, for example, do not consume brain, lymph nodes, and other tissues that tend to accumulate the prion proteins.
Not brains from any animal?
Well, specifically, I'm talking about chronic wasting disease. So brains from animals that
deer,
have been tested.
Elk,
deer, mole, deer, mule, deer, white-tailed deer, elk, and moose that have been infected with chronic wasting disease.
Okay. The system that's in now, certainly in Illinois, are all deer and other animals which are hunted and shot and certainly prepared for human consumption, are they tested?
There is a proportion of the deer in the state of Illinois that is being tested for chronic wasting disease. A very good resource for all of our hunters in the state of Illinois is the Illinois Department of Natural Resources, and they would have in their website, they will have a list of the places where samples will be accepted for testing for chronic wasting disease.
But is it voluntary at this point?
At this point, it is a voluntary effort and certainly a very valuable effort for both the understanding of where the disease is present in the state and our opportunities to understand how does it spread.
I'm wondering how does the testing process work? Would you just send a small portion off to a certain site? Would there be a place relatively close by that you could go to? How does it work?
Well, as Dr. Mateus had said earlier, it's fairly difficult to test for this disease because it's actually a protein. So there are specific tissues that we can see the accumulation of the protein, either the top of the spinal cord or some lymph nodes from the head of the animal. Those are collected and put in a fixative, and then very much like you would see on the TV shows, these are sent off. They're cut into thin sections and examined with a microscope after staining for the protein. So it's a fairly labor-intensive and a fairly time-consuming process. There is nowhere that an individual hunter can go to have this done on his own. He needs to work with the DNR and the state diagnostic lab to have the testing done.
Okay. We are talking about chronic wasting disease, which has been infecting and killing deer in many parts of the country, including some in Illinois. Our guests are two researchers on the U of I campus who have been looking at Illinois' attempts to manage the problem, Nora Mateus at the Illinois Natural History Survey, and at the Department of Animal Sciences, Professor Jan Novikoski. Do you hunt deer? Have you seen the guidelines coming your way concerning this disease? Well, give us a phone call or send us an email. We're at 1-800-222-9455. That's toll-free, 1-800-222-WYLL, and you can email us at will-talk@illinois.edu. Besides offering this testing, what else has the Department of Natural Resources been doing? They've been doing their own testing of the deer population and trying to identify where outbreaks are relatively high?
The state of Illinois has been working on surveillance, that is a detection of chronic wasting disease, since probably since 2002.
And that's when we first found it in Illinois?
Yes. And in fact, actually, the state of Illinois had found that first positive case just like a few weeks before they started the surveillance program. So it was real interesting because they were already prepared and ready to launch the surveillance effort. And then we had our first positive. But through 10 years of work, the state actually has been able to look for the disease throughout the state of Illinois. Clearly, every year, different counties are evaluated. And then in the areas where the disease has been detected, the state of Illinois has implemented a very localized effort of removal of animals in an area where the disease is present.
So there's essentially culling of animals.
That is correct.
So that deer might be hunted and shot and removed, certainly not sent out for human consumption or anything like that. in those areas?
The hunters in those areas are always encouraged to submit their samples for detection of chronic wasting disease. The test results are provided to them very, very rapidly through an online
reporting system.
Yeah, and that allows the hunter to make their own choices of whether consuming or not the meat. The samples are collected by the state of Illinois through the sharpshooting effort, are again tested for CWD, and all the meat that tests negative is donated to the pantry, to the food pantry.
By negative, we mean no chronic wasting disease.
That is correct.
It's safe to use.
They have been using for the last 10 years what we call the gold standard in the diagnostic testing of chronic wasting disease. It's a tool that, like Dr. Nowakowski brought up earlier, actually is the best tool that we have for detecting chronic wasting disease. And any animal that tests negative essentially is allowed to be consumed, submitted to the food pantry.
So in cases where the DNR decides to cull the deer population, essentially they hire people to go out and shoot deer there. And, of course, they can't tell in advance if the deer has chronic wasting disease. Therefore, the negative results get the venison gets donated. But that also means that in that area, there are fewer deer available for hunters in general, right?
So a couple important points about the program. So first of all, the DNR does rely heavily on the samples from hunters to recognize specific locations where there is a diseased deer. Mm-hmm. Now, we know from years of study of wildlife behavior roughly how far deer are going to move around. So we know that if you find a deer in this particular spot, he may move a mile or two in any direction, but he has a pretty narrow home range. So the culling of deer by the DNR is restricted just to those locations where we have a diseased animal and the deer that he may have moved around or she may have moved around and infected. So this is very, very localized culling. It's just intended to remove animals that may have become infected by the previously known diseased animal. So this is very localized. And
it's not like you're going to wipe out a deer population in an entire county, for instance.
Absolutely not.
Okay.
Yeah, and the other thing is that the most important thing is first to obtain the test results, and based on those test results, the food is donated to the food pantry.
Okay, and I should note from what I've seen right now, chronic wasting disease has been found strictly in northern Illinois. I think it may get down, I guess, one of the DuPage County might be the farthest east county that was effective. That's right up against Cook County and Chicago suburbs. But it sounds like the heaviest instances have been found have really been up in northern Illinois, closer to the border.
Yes, that is correct. There are a couple of counties in the northern part of the state that have been heavily affected by chronic wasting disease. It was just until last year that the first case of chronic wasting disease was found in DuPage County.
Yes, and that's part of the measure of success, that we've managed to keep this disease from spreading very far south. If you compare the range that we find infected animals in Illinois to other states, we've managed to keep this into a relatively small location. Now, that's important because if you think about the potential, I emphasize, that this might be transmitted to other animals or to humans, we'd like to keep that range as small as possible just in case, keep people safer.
I want to get back to more about how Illinois' efforts stack up with other states, but we have some phone calls lining up, and I want to say hello to Andy from Charleston on line 4. Good morning. Yeah. You're on Focus.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call. My question was that doesn't it suggest that there could be some hope for a vaccine development based on the fact that you're finding evidence, especially in lymph nodes? The fact that it's being seen in lymph nodes as protein suggests, doesn't it, that there is, in fact, some kind of immune response? I'll hang up and listen to your answer. Thanks.
Okay, thank you very much, Andy.
So let me sort of answer that question from the last part first. So the mere fact this protein is found in the lymphatic system or immune tissue simply means that it's associated with immune cells. It doesn't necessarily mean it's an immune response. Now, by the same token, I mean, we're always hopeful for these things, and there are many, many laboratories working on vaccines or other sorts of drugs that might be used to treat this problem, and clearly, because it does occur, this disease occurs in humans, that we would like to have better diagnostics for humans or treatment for humans as well. We've been working on this for maybe 15 years or so right now, and so far we have glimmers of hope, but we haven't got anything that is really what we would call a successful candidate yet. So keep your fingers crossed. We'll keep ours crossed, and we'll keep working on it.
How do we treat other prion-spread diseases in humans, whether it's like the human version of mad cow disease or Kuru? What do we do since they're not spread by virus or bacteria?
Jim, this is the reason the disease is scary, and this is the reason that the control effort is important. There is no treatment.
There is no treatment at all. There is no therapy. There is nothing to alleviate symptoms or try to reduce the spread of the protein.
No, there's not. So once an individual has this disease, they will eventually die from that disease. This is particularly unfortunate when this happens in a younger individual. Sometimes it happens in, commonly happens in older people, and it looks very much like Alzheimer's. It's something that we're, you know, certainly more used to accepting, older people having this type of neurological deterioration, but it's very tragic when it occurs in a young individual.
Well, this is something, and it's something I want to be sure of, because I first saw and read that this was the case with chronic wasting disease in deer, that it was always fatal when discovered. But, of course, there are limits in what you can do in treating wild animals. But when you're talking about human beings who could submit to medical care in hospital conditions, et cetera, what you're saying, there's nothing you can do.
No, unfortunately, there's not.
There's nothing to slow down, even slow down and delay the spread of the prion protein through the body.
No, unfortunately. I wish I could tell you differently, but that's not.
Yeah, and that's one of the biggest challenges with this neurodegenerative diseases. The prion protein not only is very there's nothing that we know on how to stop it, but once they have damaged the neurological cells, there's pretty much no return back. So what is happening with a lot of, for example, the brain cells is that they will end up sort of in a spongiform kind of form where they are no longer functional, and that is just something that is just not reversible.
Okay. I want to take another call now, and we're on line one. I'm saying hello to Gary and Gilman. Good morning. You're on Focus.
Good morning. This is on the related side, but blue tongue disease. We hunt in southern Illinois, down Effingham County, Jasper, and Hamilton County. And in the last 5 years, there's been a lot of deer have died from blue tongue disease. Can you explain anything of that?
Blue tongue disease is a disease that has increased in its interest over the last few years. Blue tongue disease is very different to chronic wasting disease. Blue tongue disease is actually transmitted by a vector. It is
by vector we mean
yes, you're correct, Jim. Thank you. Vector meaning basically
a virus.
No, I mean a bug.
A bug.
Yes.
Okay.
So what is happening is that this bug essentially is biting on the deer, and the bug is actually transmitted the virus. And blue
tongue
disease.
Wikipedia telling me it's a midge with a complicated Latin name.
Yes. So Wikipedia is telling you it's a midge, and it is essentially a midge that likes to live along streamlines, and blue tongue actually occurs more frequently during the times of drought, where the animals would actually concentrate in some of these streams, creating an opportunity for them to become exposed to these midges. And it is a viral disease, which chronic wasting disease, clearly it is not.
Okay. And is it a disease that poses a risk to humans?
In terms of blue tongue virus, it does not pose a risk to humans. The thing with blue tongue virus is that it causes high mortalities in deer. And that is essentially perhaps what our caller is really concerned about, because when these outbreaks occur, they're occurring in a very concentrated area, and the mortalities could be relatively high.
So it can definitely affect the population. There's not a risk, say, of anything spreading if someone were to unknowingly eat meat from an infected animal.
Yes, and perhaps in the question that you bring up in terms of affecting a population, I would actually be a little bit more concerned about the overall impact of something like in the long run, the overall impact on the population associated with chronic wasting disease. The reason is because this is a disease that has such a long-term persistent in the animal population that it has the opportunity to spread itself perhaps a lot more rapidly than what we would see with blue tongue.
Okay, so definitely different situations going on here with a viral insect spread disease like blue tongue and something like chronic wasting disease spread by these prion proteins.
Correct. And the other thing is with chronic wasting disease, at least to date, we do not have a vector, a bug, a midge, or anything like that that is associated with the transmission of chronic wasting disease.
Well, we're going to take a short break, and we'll continue our conversation about the impact of chronic wasting disease on the deer population in Illinois and other states, and the things we know and don't know about the disease and whether or not there's a risk of it jumping to other species. This is Focus on WYLL. We are back on Focus on WYLL. I'm Jim Meadows. We're talking with Nora Mateus at the Illinois Natural History Survey and University of Illinois Animal Sciences Professor Jan Novikovsky. The topic is chronic wasting disease. It's a disease that strikes deer and elk and moose. It's turned up in Illinois and several other regions in North America. We welcome your questions about Illinois has managed its deer population in an effort to minimize the disease's impact. Our number is 1-800-222-9455. That's 1-800-222-WYLL. You can email us at will-talk@illinois.edu. I think there was one last word you wanted to get in about blue tongue. The blue tongue disease, which is not chronic wasting disease, but also noting that the insect that spreads it is not going to be very active during regular deer hunting season.
That's correct. If you are hunting in a normal gun season, the midges are frozen out. Hopefully, most years they're frozen out. So, and that disease actually comes and causes the animals to die fairly quickly. So the risk of exposure to humans, even though there's very little risk in the first place, it's unlikely that a hunter would be exposed to the disease at that time of the year.
Back to chronic wasting disease, and we have a caller on line 4, Fran from Oak Lawn. Good morning. You're on Focus.
Hi. Another great program, you guys. I wanted to ask two questions and make a point, I hope. Are you there?
Yes. Yes.
Oh, it went so silent. number one, what effect does this disease, if any, have on scavengers who might find the, afflicted animals or predators who might find the afflicted animals, in nature?
Fran, to date, we do not have any evidence that this disease, chronic wasting disease, has an effect on scavengers.
Good. Okay. Number two, overpopulation. We have periodically had problems up here in northern Illinois. As far as I'm concerned, we still do. With overpopulation of these deer herds, there's a lot of politics involved, a lot of sentimentality involved, and the animals die, especially of starvation. Does this overpopulation enhance the spread of this chronic wasting disease?
Well, because the disease is transmitted from animal to animal, the population density clearly has an effect on transmission. If you have lots and lots of deer in a small space and one of them is sick, he has more opportunity, or she has more opportunity to transmit the disease to other deer. So, and that's also the basis, the classic basis for wildlife disease management, is we try and reduce the population at local spots to prevent that transmission.
Once again, man interfering. We've eliminated all the predators, and we refuse to cull them, or more specifically, cull them in a way that nature would. Instead, we let our hunters go out there and take off the best specimens instead of the weak and the dying and the old. Are there problems with this disease or similar diseases in other countries?
Canada actually has a relatively large program for control of chronic wasting disease, and they obviously have animals that are infected, but outside of the U.S. and Canada, just us.
And, Fran, you bring up also a very important question here or comment that hunters we want the hunters to have the best of the animals. And that is also a very important recommendation for the hunters. It is best if they do not actually remove a deer that looks sick or just doesn't look right. And that is a recommendation essentially focusing on the fact that we do not understand completely if there are any reasons to be concerned about chronic wasting disease moving to humans.
Fran, I wanted to thank you very much for your call. The question of culling, and it sounds like something that Fran might endorse in certain situations, but has this been a point of controversy with hunters or anybody else as the DNR has moved ahead with their program?
I think it is a difficult situation because there are different stakeholders. There are different stakeholders. It is controversial because most of us just do not really like the idea of going in and having and killing animals just for killing animals. But at the same time, at this point, we do not have any other resource to actually manage the chronic wasting disease. So because of the limitation, our only choice is really to actually do a localized removal of deer in areas where the disease is present.
We have a question from David from Urbana on line one. Good morning, you're on Focus.
Well, a couple of things that haven't been explained, I think. This differs from bacterial and viral diseases in that it is a mutation in a normal protein. It occurs, I think, once in every, in cattle, 2 million or 3 million individuals, and is largely self-limiting. Transmission in deer is largely due to the fact that ruminants in general, the females eat the placenta after giving birth. It's a natural process. It conserves valuable mineral and other nutrients that are vital to the animal. It's not just the birth mother that eats the placenta, but where there are high populations, other deer will also eat placentas. And this is a large percentage of the transmission. I think it's an open question whether it's also transmitted in feces and urine. Do you have any information on that?
Well, you raised some very interesting questions. So let me start back with the first one about the mutation. Now, you are absolutely correct. In some cases, prion disease arises from a genetic mutation that changes the sequence of that protein and makes it more easily fold into the incorrect or disease-causing conformation. Now, unfortunately, once that mutation in that particular individual has occurred and we have a disease-causing protein, it can also transmit the disease to a normal individual who does not have the mutation. So we actually have the genetic basis for disease, and we have the transmitted basis for disease. In those two cases, the disease looks very similar, but they are in the second case, it's not the result of a mutation. It's a result of exposure to the misfolded protein. So you can get the disease in either of two ways. Now, in terms of transmission in the wild, so this is a very important question. So how does the disease transmit from between deer? And we actually have very good evidence that, in fact, it is transmitted in fecal material. So if a highly infected deer is in the area, other deer can be exposed to that. Fecal material dries up. It turns into dust. The deer can inhale it, or it gets dust on the plants, and they can eat it and become infected.
So we see it spreading within a species, but it's not jumping a species, for instance, when a predator or a scavenger eats an infected deer.
The transmission between species is a challenging question, because even though the protein looks very similar, so for example, if we look at sheep versus deer, the protein sequence and the protein structure are very, very similar. But part of what prevents the transmission between species is, in fact, the nature of the digestive system, the nature of the immune system, and the relationship of the immune cells, which, although this isn't an immune disease, the immune cells can transport the protein into the nervous tissue. So the structure of the intestinal tract and the relationship of immune cells in the intestinal tract are important to disease.
And I would like to add, David brought up something really important, and it is the fact that we know that this protein can actually, the infectious protein can be released in feces and in urine. This is something that we need to take into account, because like Dr. Nowakowski was bringing up earlier, transmission of chronic wasting disease can occur also through a direct contact rate, animals to animals getting really close to each other. We know that the protein is also present in saliva. But it is possible that because the contributions of the prion protein in feces and in urine can actually contaminate the environment, now we have another opportunity for transmitting chronic wasting disease to animals, even though they're not in close contact to each other. So the thought of intervention, as it is right now implemented in the state of Illinois, is targeting essentially two things. One is to remove the animals that are infected in a particular area, and at the same time, removing the contribution of that particular animal, the contribution in feces and in urine of this prion protein to the environment.
That's tricky. You're talking about that after the animal is gone, you're trying to move things like feces from the grounds where they were living.
No, certainly we are not going to be removing feces and urine. Well, what I mean by this is that by removing an infected animal, you are also removing that animal's future contribution in feces and in urine of the prion protein.
Okay.
But once the protein is in the environment, it is something that, based on knowledge with other diseases, we believe that it will stay there for a long time.
Well, David, I wanted to thank you for your call. We need to go to another line, and that's line two, where Wade from Champaign is waiting. Good morning. You're on Focus.
Thank you. I guess I was listening there. I had read an article about an operation of scientists who are studying sheep, and I guess sheep have a similar disease, in Colorado. And after they finished their studies, they shut the place down, and some time period later they brought some mule deer in to do a similar study. And there were some questions of whether the prion in the sheep had actually jumped species and started a CWD in the mule deer. Is that happening?
You raise a fascinating possibility, and certainly scientists have considered that very carefully. Unfortunately, looking back in time, that's just so far in the past that we don't really have any tools to positively say one way or the other. It remains a possibility, but we can't prove it or disprove it.
What is the name of the disease that the sheep have? What do we call that?
That disease is called scrapie. And we've actually had scrapie. We have historical records of scrapie going back for some 500 years. Yeah. And the disease is real noticeable in sheep because part of the neurological damage causes them to itch. And since you're raising sheep for wool, they kind of scratch themselves on fence posts or trees and lose their wool. So you have a diseased animal that has these big bare patches, and it's been very obvious for a very long time.
What have they done with the sheep in all the years, and what will the state do with the infected deer it finds? Simply put it in a landfill, or how do you keep it from, you know, contaminating the rest of the environment?
Well,
it's been killed.
The two strategies that we use for making sure we don't contaminate the environment, we either incinerate the carcass or we can actually digest them with chemicals. So, for example, in Galesburg, we have a large chemical digester here on campus. For example, we don't have any sheep with scrapie, but we would have incinerators that would be capable of destroying that protein.
Okay, good.
Wade, are you a hunter yourself?
Yes.
And have you been receiving information about guidelines about a request to send samples of tissue from deer into the DNR for testing for chronic wasting disease?
I want to say it was about maybe 13 years ago or so. I got very interested in it, hearing it's moving from Wisconsin down into Illinois. And I did take a doe way back then, 12 years ago, to Galesburg to have her tested.
Do you have to take the entire carcass in?
No, it just took the head.
Okay.
Yeah, and Wade, something that is important for you to know right now is that, again, the guidelines are really well presented in the website of the Illinois Department of Natural Resources. If you go to that website and actually type CWD, you will find a lot of information as to how to proceed.
Right. Okay.
Well, Wade, thank you. Well, Wade, thank you. Thank you very much for calling. And we still have time for more calls about chronic wasting disease and how it's affecting the deer population and the elk and moose population in other parts of the country. Number to call here on Focus to speak with our guests is 1-800-222-9455, 1-800-222-WILL. The email address, will-talk@illinois.edu. We're talking with Nora Mateus from the Illinois Natural History Survey and Jan Novikovsky, an animal sciences professor at the U of I. Now, when you looked at what Illinois was doing, I guess the question I'm wondering, over the years, what do we know about the level of infection, the number, the percentage of animals, if we can make an estimate, of the deer population infected with chronic wasting disease? Has it grown? Has it stayed steady? Has it shrunk?
Well, what we know right now is that the prevalence, that is the amount of disease in the deer herd of the state of Illinois, began at around 1%, and really it has remained around 1%.
1% of the deer population estimated to be infected with chronic wasting disease.
It is basically 1% of the animals that are tested for CWD. So it is 1% of the animals tested for CWD.
How does that compare with other states? And I understand you looked specifically at Wisconsin, and they were doing things a little differently from Illinois.
So Wisconsin actually was pursuing a slightly different strategy, and part of that is based upon the difference they have in landscape. So if you've been in southern Wisconsin, part of it looks like Illinois. Part of it has more forest and more connected forest. So they were actually trying to cull deer in larger areas. And in fact, that was politically unpopular. And some years ago, they changed their control to basically relying on hunting, liberalized hunting, to reduce the populations. And partly because hunters don't go to the places where disease are, hunters go where they're used to hunting or where they can hunt. The prevalence of disease has gone up since that time in Wisconsin.
Yeah.
Well, it's gone up to where?
So currently about 5%?
That is correct. We're
okay.
about
so
5%.
In 5 years, it's gone up from 1% to about 5%.
Now, do we think that it's going to hold steady there, or could it go up even farther?
The trends are indicating that that is an incremental increase compared to what we're seeing in the state of Illinois in relationship to management. The trends in the state of Illinois have remained flat and at a low percentage, 1%.
Well, looking at that, do you think culling is a good long-term solution to the incidence of chronic wasting disease, or are we just biding our time until something else can be done?
I think a little bit depends on what you mean by long-term. So we are working on vaccines and treatments and things like that, but those are ways down the road. In the meantime, I think we need the culling, localized culling, that we've demonstrated success over the past decade. I think that remains our best option to keep this disease in check. And keep it in check until we know more about how the risk is or what the risk is for livestock or humans, and until we have a better technology to perhaps control it as a disease as opposed to something we have no treatment for.
I'm wondering about the way the disease is spread, and we were talking a little bit before about animals in close quarters picking it up, you know, from things like for feces or ruminants. Can this protein go into the soil? Can plants be a carrier of it? Plants which may not be infected themselves, so to speak, but would be then eaten again by animals and could be infected.
It's a fascinating thing. I would guess that a fair number of our audience have done an experiment sometime in their childhood where they put food coloring in water and then put in some white carnations or white flowers in that food coloring, and over a few hours, those flowers changed color, sometimes blue. If you go to the florist, you can see those right now. And
you mean those blue carnations are not true blue?
Well, some of the ones that we have in Illinois are true blue carnations, but many of them are food coloring.
Okay.
Unfortunately,
new every day. Okay.
The prion protein is very much like that because it's a very small particle in essence, and if it's suspended in water or in the dirt, we have plants growing where there is an infection or an accumulation of chronic wasting disease protein. The plant can take up those protein particles and then become infectious. So this is part of the reason that we need to understand the environmental transmission, environmental persistence.
And also try to decrease the contributions of those proteins to an environment, and hopefully with the goal of decreasing the opportunity for the uptake of some of those prion proteins and some of the environmental particles, plants and so forth.
One thing I'm wondering about, you were talking earlier about the difficulty of the prion proteins sort of jumping species and say for chronic wasting disease to break out in another species. And yet in the case of mad cow disease, we do seem to have that incident happening. Again, a different disease, but something spread by prion proteins. What happened there if the spreading of prion proteins from a disease in one species to another is so difficult?
Well, part of it is, you know, there's two issues, and it goes back to one of our callers' comments about genetics. So there is a small population or a small subset of humans who are genetically susceptible. And also you have to understand the number of cases of mad cow disease was just enormous, hundreds of thousands of cases of mad cow disease, and we have a relatively small number of mad cow disease cases in humans in the hundreds. So I guess if you simply compare the numbers of hundreds and hundreds of thousands of cattle that may have actually gone into the human food supply versus the few hundred cases, you have some estimate of the difficulty in jumping from one species to another. Now, if you look at the number of infected animal or infected deer that may have been consumed, the number is very small compared to the number of cattle. So part of this is a measure of the statistical improbability of jumping.
Is there anywhere in all the places where deer populations have been found with chronic wasting disease that the infection rate has been, say, higher than the 5% of tested animals in Wisconsin?
Actually, there are some places in Colorado where basically because it's been there a long time and it was uncontrolled because it was unrecognized for many years, that the incidence is much higher.
Okay. And that also raises a question. This is a disease that is always fatal. Is there any way for the disease to essentially play itself out in a population?
Part of the answer is really no, because the disease, when an animal becomes sick, the disease can be transmitted for a long period of time, many, many months before the animal actually dies. So it's not like a disease that is acutely fatal. It has a long incubation period and a long period of infectivity.
Well, it sounds like even though we've found out something important from your study about the effectiveness of Illinois' techniques to control chronic wasting disease, it's still something a little scary that's going to be with us for a while.
We still have a long, long, long route to understand more about this disease.
Well, my thanks to both of my guests today. I'm sorry that we're out of time. Both researchers on the University of Illinois campus, Noah Mateus at the Illinois Natural History Survey, and Professor Jan Novakovsky with the Department of Animal Sciences. Welcome any additional thoughts you have about today's program on our website. Go to will.illinois.edu/focus, and we will be adding a link to the Department of Natural Resources page about chronic wasting disease. Today's show was produced by Lindsay Moon, Jason Croft, our technical director, Sari Lesk, our intern, helping with production and research. Tomorrow, we'll look at woodworking with help from Tim Yoder, whose TV series, Woodturning Workshop, has been seen on public TV stations across the country. Focus is live each weekday morning at 10, with a replay at 8 p.m. here on AM 580 and will.illinois.edu. This is Focus on WILL.